Today on Doomed! The mystery of the secret police tapes that have dogged 2020 Democratic presidential candidate, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Well, maybe a mystery no longer. Today on the show, Jonathan Larson, managing editor of the Young Turks' TYT Investigates, walks us through the controversy surrounding these elusive tapes and his breaking report, which uncovers what exactly is on them. Folks, my name is Matt Binder, and this is Doomed. As always, you can support this show by going to patreon.com/mattbinder and subscribing to the YouTube channel at doomed.tv and subscribing to iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts at doomedpod.com. And now, with any further ado, I'm going to pull up the cameras here and my guest, Jonathan Larson of TYT Investigates. How are you doing tonight?
How's it going, man? Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining me on this wonderful Thursday night.
You bet.
So before we jump into your report, because this is a meaty report, you really dove into what this whole thing is about and what people have been sort of rumors and sort of speculation have been going around for way before Pete Buttigieg was even a national figure on the 2020 Democratic primary stage. This has sort of been something that has been in the gossip of South Bend, Indiana. And there's these apparently secret police tapes that have never been released, still haven't been released. And what apparently is the big deal about these tapes? Why have people been talking about them? And how does Pete Buttigieg sort of fall into what these tapes are even about?
So roughly 3 months into Pete Buttigieg's mayoralty, we're talking March 2012 now, he asked his police chief, Daryl Boykins, who was the city's first black police chief, had been in the office for about 4 or 5 years or so. He said, I want you to step down. I want you to resign. And at first, Boykins did resign. And then the black community said, no, that's not going to happen. So Boykins rescinded his resignation. And because the mayor doesn't have the power in South Bend to say, well, you're off the force, what ended up happening was he got demoted. Buttigieg demoted Boykins down to the level of captain. Roughly 11 days later, he also fired a woman named Karen DePape, who was, I believe, the director of communications was her title. That's a civilian office within the South Bend Police Force. And they were both let go, Buttigieg said at the time, because federal prosecutors said, we've got potential wiretapping violations here. And if you don't remove people, we're going to have to prosecute them. So Buttigieg's position at the time was, I'm saving these people from prosecution by removing them from office. Now, Boykins ended up ultimately filing a lawsuit claiming there was racial animus involved in his demotion, but he has not really spoken publicly about this. Karen DePape, the woman who was fired, very soon, possibly even the same day after she was fired, she spoke with the media and she said a couple things. She said that there was racist rhetoric used on the tapes and that there was potential police wrongdoing. And then a few months later, she filed a lawsuit for wrongful termination, claiming that she added to her description of what was on these tapes, she saying that the cops discussed a plan to get Buttigieg to get rid of Boykins. Now, since then, it's been a mystery what racial epithets were used, what any of the substance of the details was behind these tapes has been a mystery ever since. And virtually everyone I've just named, plus additional people, have filed lawsuits or been sued. So it's been essentially clamped down, And for 6, 7 years now, roughly, South Bend's, maybe it's too broad to say the entire politics, but certainly the relationship between the police force and the black community, this has been an unspoken and sometimes a spoken explicit undercurrent of what exactly was on these tapes. Were police using racist rhetoric? So that's kind of been the mystery these past 6, 7 years, however long it is.
So I sort of just want to frame this in why this is, obviously it's a big deal for the people of South Bend and the state of Indiana, but I want to frame this also as to why this is a big deal nationally. Because Pete Buttigieg is a guy who seemingly came out of nowhere. He obviously was a mayor of South Bend. He has a he ran for the to be DNC chief back after the year after the 2016 elections, when the DNC was shaking things up after the loss to Donald Trump, and DNC received a lot of blowback from how they sort of handled the primaries and also obviously losing to Trump. And he ran, he dropped out before the final vote, sort of gained a little bit of notoriety from that because he seemed like he was sort of this young, upcoming figure in the Democratic Party. And then fast forward to 2019, he throws his hat into the 2020 presidential ring for the Democratic primary. And beginning of the summer, this guy starts to take off. And a lot of talk about Pete Buttigieg being a top-tier candidate. He's since then, since the beginning of the summer, sort of cooled down a bit, and he's dropped into, back into the high single digits. But still, when you know people discuss who the top like five candidates are,
Sure.
he's right up there with senators and former vice presidents, this mayor of South Bend, Indiana.
Well, yeah, and he actually, I would say, came to national prominence even before the DNC race by coming out as a gay man, and not just a gay man, but a gay man who was a veteran of the war in Afghanistan, a Rhodes Scholar. Clearly, whatever else you might think of him, you cannot deny the man his resume. So, people might not like it, but he's certainly earned his place on the national stage. Whether that makes him a viable presidential candidate or not, that's up to people to make their own judgments. But what you refer to is kind of what drew my interest in the first place, which was that he hadn't operated on really even a state level, let alone a federal level. And so back in March, I was coming off of some other reporting, and I thought it was about time for me to start looking at presidential candidates, and who among them has not really gotten vetted at a state level, let alone federal. And Buttigieg kind of drew my interest for precisely that reason, because I thought, as the mayor of a small to mid-sized city, he probably has not been vetted to it to a really sort of rigorous degree. And so that drew my interest. And so this was back in March of this year. I started making some phone calls, and then I went to South Bend in April.
Now, before we get into your report and your on-the-ground experience with uncovering what's on these tapes, which I'm sure everyone's the point of listening is to know what's on these tapes, but I'm gonna, I wanna add a little bit more flavor to this because I do think, listen, it's not just because I'm trying to add some sort of drama that's not there. What I'm being, to be honest, when I saw Pete Buttigieg jump into the race, some of the first criticisms I saw from about him were people who were from South Bend, Indiana, floating just really like cryptically out there, like just wait until the rest of the country finds out about the tapes, just like that, like as if people, like as if it's something that's just talked about there, as you know, you say the tapes and everyone knows what they're talking about. It's like a big deal there, and I think you know whether you're a Buttigieg supporter or not, listening to this show. I'm sure that it's mostly not Buttigieg supporters, knowing my fan base. But even if you're a non, if you are a supporter coming across this episode, and you want to know more about Pete Buttigieg, I think it's important to know everything about all these candidates' history. And this is a defining moment in a politician's career, how they handle a moment like this. And now let's get to these tapes. Tell us about going down to South Bend. And sort of, I guess, where did you look? Like, how did you discover? Because the actual tapes themselves are still eluding us. You haven't listened to the actual tapes, but you have documents, official documentation of what's on these tapes.
Well, so that's what's kind of interesting, at least to me, is that when I first started looking into South Bend and the tapes, it was very clear that the tapes were under lock and key and no one was going to get to them. And my first thought was, well, okay, but the tapes are of interest because people think they hold the answer to a question. The question being, is there racism on the South Bend police force? And my first thought was, I don't need the tapes to answer that question. If there is racism on the police force, I can find it other ways, right? And so I talked to...
Well, also, the question of, is there racism on any police force is pretty much a rhetorical.
to whatever extent that's true, right. It still matters to what extent that's true, right? And there was one officer in particular who was kind of the star, or seen as the star of the tapes. And I asked around about him, and I spoke to law enforcement sources, and I spoke to one woman who had been arrested by this guy, and they said, yeah, he's used the N-word, he's used racist rhetoric, and we reported that. And so I sort of thought, okay, I don't need the tapes. And then what ended up happening was, and if you feel the need to, like, fast forward me to the payoff, do so at any time. But basically, the first thing I discovered was that Buttigieg's campaign finance forms from his first mayoral race, they're gone. They don't exist anymore. Now, that's in accordance with Indiana state law, which says you don't have to retain them past 4 years. So they're gone. And back in April, I asked the Buttigieg campaign, did you keep copies? And if so, may I see them? And I've, to this day, gotten no response. And then over the summer, I was able to obtain one of those filings from the first quarter of 2011, roughly. And one of the names that jumped out at me was an attorney named Rich Hill, who gave Buttigieg $1,000 in the first quarter of 2011. This was March of 2011. This guy gave him $1,000. And the reason that jumped out at me was because 1 year later, this is all public knowledge now, that same attorney, Rich Hill, was the point guy that Buttigieg chose to get rid of Boykins and DePape. And so the fact that this donor, 1 year later, turned out to be a central figure in removing these people kind of pointed me back to the tapes again. And now I'll get to your payoff. So what I found out was that...
Wait, actually, before you get to the payoff, not to...
Yes, let's draw this out, man.
Before you get to the payoff, actually. So it's important to really drive home, I think, why those files from when he ran are so important to what's on these tapes. Now, to truly sort of get why what's on these tapes go back to that, I think we should even get to that before we get to what's on the tapes. It's because there are donors who wanted something from Pete Buttigieg. Apparently.
Which I didn't know at the time.
Right.
Which I found out, apparently. Yeah, so, and people should also understand that I think most people are used to federal standards and federal law in terms of campaign giving. In Indiana, it's very different. It's I don't know if there are limits, but if there are, I don't know what they are. You can write a five-figure check pretty easily for a mayoral candidate. And as you might imagine, that holds proportionately a hell of a lot more weight than the $2,700 or $2,900 max at the federal level does. So what I ended up finding was that Karen DePape, the woman who had listened to the tapes and got fired for her role in it, back in January of 2012, she actually filed an official report, an internal report with the South Bend Police Department. And so I was able to access that report. And also in response to, related to her wrongful termination suit, the city of South Bend, she sued the city and Pete Buttigieg, mayor thereof. She sued them for wrongful termination. And towards the end of 2013, they sent her a long list of questions saying, what did you hear on this tape? What did you hear on this tape? What did you hear on this one? And why did you think it was worth transferring from the digital computerized phone system onto these cassette tapes that she then gave to the chief? So in other words, maybe no one was talking, but now there are documents. So all I had to do was look at the documents, because she chronicled on those documents in response to the city's questions what is on the tapes. And if you want, if it's okay, I will discuss what we if you're trying to get us past a commercial break or something, I'll play along, but I'm happy to lay it out now too.
All right, I think it's time.
Okay.
So what are on these tapes?
Right. So technically speaking, we don't know what's on the tapes. What we do know is what this woman, Karen DePape, wrote in these documents is on the tapes because she listened to them. And what we hear is there was an officer, a captain, who apparently did not realize after switching lines, after a bunch of promotions happened, he didn't realize that the line he got was one of the lines that was being recorded as a matter of course, right? Lots of police departments record incoming lines. So what she heard over the course of 2011, especially the first half of 2011, was this captain was being briefed by a lieutenant in the county's homicide unit on a plan by the county homicide commander, a guy named Tim Corbett, to use Pete Buttigieg's donors. Remember, this is before Buttigieg is the mayor, so he's in the middle of his campaign. Corbett wants to use Buttigieg's donors to pressure Buttigieg to get Boykins, the first black police chief, out of office. So that's the sort of big piece of it. There's also apparently a racist aspect to this. At one point, one of the officers is quoted saying something like that Corbett said something like, "It's going to be a fun time when all white people are in charge." Black officers are named as the Ebonics are used to discuss Boykins, and two other black officers are named in terms of not in positive ways. So and then in June of 2011, Buttigieg, according to these documents, says Boykins is done. Now, I should make a couple caveats here. Pretty early on in these tapes, the officers say that they believe Buttigieg to be unaware of all of this stuff. So there's no indication on the tapes that Buttigieg knew what racial aspects there might have been to the officer's rationale, or we don't even know whether he agreed with his donors' lobbying or whether he, for his own reasons, decided that Boykins was done. So there are still a lot of question marks around this.
Right.
But the other thing I want to emphasize about these documents is that Buttigieg has said consistently over the years, "I don't know what's on the tapes." And then in his book earlier this year, he says something along the lines, I'm paraphrasing, "I don't even know if it's legal for me to ask." But according to these documents, his lawyers, who are acting on his behalf, did ask in 2013 multiple questions about what's on this tape, why did you think it worth recording? What's on this tape? Why did you think it's worth recording? So there are multiple silos to this story, which is why it's if folks make it to the print version, that's why it's so long. I'm sorry, but that's why it's so long.
No, it's a great piece, and I have that linked in both the YouTube description and on the public Patreon page where I post all the shows. Everyone should go and read that full piece because a lot of names. It's to see the print version of it, to see the names and be able to go back and make sure you're following. It was a big help, but at the same time, I think talking about it too will also help add to when people go back and read the full version. Now, the thing that I question, I don't know if you could answer this at this point, is if what the when you say the police say that Buttigieg is, they believe Buttigieg is unaware of this plan. In fact, I believe you even say in your report they knock Buttigieg himself as some sort of like scrawny upstart kid or something like that.
Little effing squirt is the phrase, I believe.
Ah, little effing squirt, scrawny kid. What's that? No, yeah. But that's, you know, they clearly not such a big fan of Buttigieg either.
That's correct.
But then the question is,
and it's not even clear that they're big fans of the donors that they're using in the interim. And I should add, by the way, that the Buttigieg campaign didn't quite deny. They basically insulted me and said something like, "We know that you're willing to print rumors that you can't prove," which, okay, that's kind of journalism in a way. Journalism is not a court of law. We don't prove things. We report right. things.
And that's why you use wording such as allegedly, you know, this yeah, person yeah. says.
If you want to say that it's not true, go right ahead.
Right.
But they have not said that. The two donors, I did speak to both donors. One of them hung up on me after about 45 seconds, but the other, you know, had we had a meaningful conversation, and both of them said this did not happen, or words to that effect. So again, we don't know how true what the cops are saying actually was. Maybe they were getting bad information. But the other point I want to make is that the documents also chronicle conversations that Buttigieg allegedly was having with people other than the donors. There are people who are currently in power in South Bend law enforcement who also were said to be having conversations with Buttigieg in 2011 about who should replace Boykins. And so the reason that's important, I think, is because there's no indication, there's been no public acknowledgement from Buttigieg, yes, before I was elected, I had substantive conversations with a number of people about why the popular incumbent black police chief of my city's police force should go. That's never been, as far as I'm aware, no one's even asked Buttigieg whether that took place, let alone why. So that's why I think that's a potentially important aspect to all of this.
Right. And to me, there's sort of three questions I have here. And, you know, let's go through each of them. Because number one, and again, I don't even know if you can answer these, is, you know, going off what these police say on the tapes, even about Buttigieg, it seems like someone in Buttigieg's position could come out and say, hey, this is what these tapes are. I had nothing to do with it. I abhor what was said and done. And, you know, I just didn't know. Why try to act as if you're guilty of something when the signs, according to what we know, are allegedly on these tapes, the signs point to him possibly not knowing?
Yeah, I mean, to answer that question at this point would be speculation. And I can't tell you why he would not say X, Y, or Z. There have certainly been, I think, conflicting explanations for, you know, the rationales as to why people were let go, for instance. There have been questions raised even by local media at the time as to who he was getting advice from. Like I mentioned, that outside counsel at the time, who had strong political connections, had been the city attorney back in the 1980s. So there are lots of circumstances, right, I think, that raise questions. And I think, you know, is it possible that there are answers that are fairly, you know, exculpatory? That's certainly within the realm of possibility. But I also think, you know, this is someone, the mayor, Pete Buttigieg, has been saying for years, I want to know what's on the tapes. And without being too cynical about it, when I told them what was on the tapes, they did not seem too happy to be hearing about it.
Right. Right. Well, maybe it's the first time they've heard it.
In which case, I thought you wanted to know.
Right. Right.
But if it's the first time you're hearing of it, that's the best case scenario. Because if it's not the first time you're hearing of it, well, then you've known.
Right. And also, weird to not, you know, be on the same page as your lawyers, right? I mean, because it seems like they knew what this sort of brings me back actually to my second question, and we could include this in here. That woman who lost her job and wrote this and wrote what she heard on these tapes, she wrote what she heard, and there was this process that was followed, and you would assume that there would be some sort of documentation that would basically refute her version of events if what she heard on the tapes, what she says she heard on the tapes, is inaccurate.
You mean there would be documentation refuting her account of what's on the tapes?
Right. Wouldn't there be some sort, because there was some sort of process that was followed based on what she heard, and then there was this whole process that was followed because she got fired because of her involvement?
Well, at that point, it was a legal process. There doesn't appear ever to have been an internal police process. In other words, in theory, some of this stuff could have been referred to internal affairs. Some of this stuff could have been referred to an outside prosecutor. There are a number of avenues that you could certainly take as a matter of protocol, but the documents seem to indicate that whatever she told the chief at whatever point, no action was really taken. What we do know is that the chief discussed the contents of the tapes, I believe in early January 2012, with some of the officers, and that was a big point of contention in the officers' lawsuit. They basically said that the chief was threatening to torch our careers for being disloyal, right? So the first time, essentially the catalyst for all of this becoming a big deal was the officers themselves who were on the tapes or who were discussed on the tapes going to the feds and saying, hey, I've been wiretapped illegally here and my boss is now threatening to use that information against me. And that's roughly the account that Pete Buttigieg has subscribed to over the years, both initially and after the fact. But how accurate that account is, I would say, certainly challenged vigorously by the attorneys for DePape and Boykins. But even from an objective point of view, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence on their side. Both Boykins and DePape's attorneys have said, I may be getting this wrong, some of this may be coming from the documents, so I apologize, but Boykins, I believe, was asked at some point to hold on to the tapes. Generally, you don't ask someone who's accused of theft, hey, hold on to the evidence for me. And and the documents suggest, according to DePape, she's asked at some point, when did you listen to these recordings? And at one point she says, I listened to the recordings at one point at the behest of the federal prosecutors, which again, if you are the subject of a wiretapping investigation, prosecutors typically do not say, hey, go do some more wiretapping.
Right. So who currently, do we know who currently has hold over these tapes?
Yeah. So when you referred earlier to the mayor's attorneys, that's kind of where it gets interesting, because the city attorneys seem to have been pretty effectively sidelined in this process. Instead, there was outside counsel brought in. The guy, I think I mentioned him earlier, a guy named Rich Hill, works for a law firm, a powerful Indiana law firm. The actual physical tapes are currently in the custody of the law firm in Chicago.
Wait, hold on. You did say this, but for some reason, just because of, you know, how I think, and I think most people think, this sort of stuff usually works, I had assumed that the lawyer you mentioned, even if you did mention an outside law firm, it must have just went over my head, I assumed this was a lawyer for the mayor of South Bend, as in the city representative.
It was, but they were outside counsel brought in to augment the existing city attorneys and to, you know, serve as special counsel on this case. Now,
is that normal?
Well, yes, it actually
okay.
is.
Okay.
Let me backtrack. It's normal in South Bend.
Mm.
In fact, the same city attorney, excuse me, the same outside counsel, it turned out back in 1987, it was an issue in the 1987 mayoral race, the fact that he, a former city attorney, was being paid allegedly a lot more to serve as outside counsel. So literally, this scandal had played out in virtually identical form back in 1987. But I just recently got the billing records for the first quarter of 2012, and there's a lot of work that this outside firm is doing for the city at the time. So the fact that the city was relying, and by the way, I should say, was doing work for the city prior to Buttigieg taking office. It's not as if something radical transpired when Buttigieg came into office. They were using this law firm. What's interesting about this particular lawyer being relied on for a federal case involving potential criminal violations is that he didn't have a lot of criminal experience and had no experience in federal law. And I should say, by the way, this was reported by local media at the time. So they Nice. Were, this is not me coming in and saying, I'm going to make up a controversy here. They were asking questions at the time. That reporter, as it turns out, happened to have moved on. But those questions didn't go away. They might have started hibernating a little bit, but they didn't die.
Right. You know, it's, and I want to stress what you just said again, like I said, like I even said earlier, you know, this is not something where, you know, young, upcoming politician gets on the national stage and all of a sudden he's being scrutinized for things that were never an issue. This is literally something that people in South Bend have been talking about as being something that's bad for him, if anything.
Well, not just talking about. I should say the Common Council. That's what the city's legislature is called. The Common Council has been in court for years and is still in court, trying to get these tapes, these recordings, unsealed. So the interest in knowing what's on these things is very much still an ongoing thing.
Now, if Pete Buttigieg decided that, you know, he wants to hear these tapes, and someone was to tell him that this firm has the tapes, would he have the authority to say, make these tapes public at this point?
It depends who you ask.
Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Some people say yes, some people say no. So look, right now,
who says yes and who says no?
Well, the Common Council says yes. Lots of people say yes. This is a police department. Of course we're recording your lines.
Right.
There was no malice here because when the lines got switched, the people switching the lines didn't know that that line was being recorded, and the people recording the lines didn't know that that line got switched. So there is currently a court order sealing some of this stuff, but that's essentially basically a placeholder saying until this gets resolved. But in terms of the legal arguments, there's not really a strong legal argument against this stuff being released. And more to the point, I should say, I did talk to some lawyers, friends of mine, and I said, basically, is there a case where a lawyer, could there be a situation where a lawyer is allowed to have access to evidence, in this case the tapes, but the client, who by the way is also supposed to be able to fully engage in their own defense, but the client would not be allowed to have access to that evidence? And they were like, no, of course not. So the situation now is essentially Buttigieg, I think, can only credibly claim a few things. One, these documents are entirely made up. Okay, if you want to go with that. Yes.
But saying those documents are made up, though, would then refer, if you want to be credible and say they're made up, it would infer that you would have some sort of idea of what's on the actual tapes. Because how can you claim that something is fake when you don't know?
Sure. And actually, a week ago on Friday, in response to a public records request that I filed, the city actually did release a redacted version of the initial police report filed in January of 2012, which has, as you might imagine, big chunks of Sharpie all over them. But everything else matches up nice and with everything that I've got. So, you know, there and again, I did due diligence on these things. I did the best that I could to get to A, get people who were broadly familiar with this case. And it turns out that these documents went to lots of different parties. So there's any number of people you can ask, am I nuts in thinking that this is what's on it? But also, I told the Buttigieg campaign at least a week in advance of publication, I said, we're going to be reporting that it says this, this, and this. And they didn't say it's not true.
So sort of the best case scenario here, let's, you know, in terms of the outcome for Buttigieg, if the description of what's on these tapes is true, combined with what actually happened in South Bend when he was mayor, is, from what I understand, and this is the best case scenario for him, is that these cops said these things on these tapes about donors forcing Buttigieg to fire the South Bend's black police chief if he becomes mayor. Buttigieg doesn't know about this. He becomes mayor, finds out about this whole thing with the wiretapping of these police officers, which was accidental. And also, just by same coincidence, also had plans to fire this black police chief of South Bend because of reasons where he just didn't think he was a good police chief that had nothing to do with any sort of deal with his donors or what these seemingly racist police officers felt about the chief.
I think there are probably more favorable scenarios that he could claim as well. But, you know, it's all speculative at this point. But these are relatively simple questions, I think, that he just hasn't been asked yet. I mean, most of what he's asked when he is sitting down for a substantive interview tend to be sort of about national and you know, domestic or foreign policy questions, as opposed to, by the way, that job you have, let's talk a little bit about that. So, you know, I would certainly like the opportunity. I've been requesting an interview sporadically since April, as well as, you know, answers to questions like, will you release the campaign finance form? So I don't seem to be first on their list of people they want to have him sit down with. But I hope someone on that list will eventually get around to, you know, because in his book, he says, I interviewed other people for the job. Well, when? Why? What was your thinking? Who were you talking to? Who were you taking counsel from? What were they saying? Who were you not taking counsel from? You know, this is essentially, this was a moment at the beginning of his mayoralty that ended up defining it for a significant number of people. I heard from people in South Bend, people in power, people out of power, and they're pretty unanimous that this reporting is a big deal. And that's the G version, the G-rated version of what I'm hearing.
So what is Buttigieg, has he ever really been pressed as to a real definitive reason as to why he would fire this police chief, on top of the fact that, you know, knowing what we know, and I'm assuming even though we didn't know what we knew then, I'm assuming there were still these rumors that he had to be aware of. Why even do it from a political or media standpoint? Just like a bad look.
Yeah. He says so in his book. He says, and again, I'm paraphrasing here, but he says that Boykins was a popular chief, and that it was, he doesn't use the word traumatic, but it was a painful event for the black community. And the other thing I should say is he also writes in his book at some length about the notion, he sort of floats the notion that the prosecutor, this is the federal, you know, United States Attorney's Office for Northern Indiana. He says that the prosecutor wanted Boykins out of there and essentially manipulated a young, naive mayor into doing his dirty work for him by getting rid of a popular black chief, which is sort of at odds with the notion that Buttigieg himself has said, which, he's given a number of versions. One, I was saving them from prosecution, but also he said he has said that Boykins didn't tell him quickly enough that there was an investigation, and there are some fair questions I think you could raise about what's quickly enough and what do you actually mean by that. And he's also said that he had a line to the effect of, if you're the subject of a federal investigation, you cannot occupy a leadership position in my administration, which is a little bit of presumed guilty. But also, we actually uncovered a situation where a later white police chief was the subject of a state police investigation, which we reported there was a secret state police report on that white chief. And Buttigieg saw that report and made public comments about that report, which were not borne out by the report, because we obtained, I was leaked anonymously, a portion of the report, which definitely did not exonerate that white police chief. So the idea that a black police chief who was ultimately cleared by federal prosecutors had to go, but a white police chief in the fashion that Buttigieg said by the state police could stay and enjoy Buttigieg's support, again, might be entirely okay, but we don't know that because no one's really sat down and said, let's walk through this. Get out your calendar. Let's start talking about what happened on what date.
So what happened to all these people involved? So what was these two police officers that were on this tape talking about this plot to take down the police chief? Where are these two guys at?
So the honest answer is, I don't remember the precise answers off the top of my head. I believe they both moved up within law enforcement in South Bend.
Well, of course.
I believe one of them has since retired and one of them may be in charge of the county drug unit. It's also a little complicated because the county actually has units that do police work that might typically be done by a city police unit. So the city and its suburbs all kind of feed people into some of these county units, like homicide, which was involved in the tapes, but there's also a drug unit as well. And so basically these people moved up. And one of the people that Buttigieg was talking to in 2012 about, hey, who should move up to which position, that person, I believe, was looking to become chief of the uniform division, and did become chief of the uniform division, and is the current chief of police in South Bend.
So what happened to the woman who wrote this, what was on the tapes? I'm sorry, what was her role again when she was listening to the tapes? It was early on. I can't remember. So many names.
Welcome to the rabbit hole, man.
Yeah, I know.
So her job was, if I have the title correctly, was director of communications, which was very literal. It's like the lines coming in and the
for the South Bend Police.
For the South Bend. She was a civilian employee of the South Bend Police Department. And essentially, there was a malfunction with the recording device. These incoming lines are supposed to be recorded automatically. She gets I'm making this up, but she gets a blinking light. So she's got to now reboot the thing, hit control alt delete, and then listen to all the lines and make sure that they're all being recorded as they're supposed to be. And because I mentioned earlier, one of the lines was now in possession of a different person, she writes in these documents, she's like, I continued to listen because I didn't know whether there was a malfunction because I was hearing someone's voice who I didn't think belonged on the line. So she listens long enough to start hearing things where she thinks, okay, now I've really got to start listening. And then she brings it to the chief, who doesn't do anything. This is, I think, February 2011. And she drops it. She drops it. Then in July, she's asked to listen to the line again. Why is she asked? Because it turns out the city attorneys routinely ask her to listen to the lines. They know she listens to them. This is a standard thing that they do for litigation, for public records, anytime you file a public records request for communications regarding blah, 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 they tell this woman, Karen DePape, I think I'm pronouncing it right. That's how all the local people pronounce it. And so she writes in these documents, these city attorneys of yours, they've been asking me for years to do this thing that you are now suddenly claiming you think is a federal violation. So the idea that the city attorneys never told Buttigieg, actually, Mr. New Mayor, we do this all the time.
Right.
The idea that they didn't mention that to him is a lot more plausible if they were totally sidelined and he was only taking counsel from this outside counsel who had these deep political connections to the donors, to the people jockeying for power.
And so has the police, the former police chief, has he ever come out and said anything, or did he sort of have some sort of, I guess he, there was a lawsuit with South Bend, I assume, and I'm going to guess he hasn't, and there was some sort of settlement, but
everyone has signed settlements, and virtually all of these settlements come along with, not exactly gag orders, but shut your face orders.
Right.
You know, that's part of the agreement is we're done talking about this. Let's move on.
Right. So, you know, this show normally covers these sort of, you know, usually it's on the right, political controversies and conspiracy theories. But, you know, this one to me is extraordinary in a way that it seems pretty easy for this not to be a big deal. And then it just sort of turned into this really big deal that effectively, in my opinion, speaks to something broader. And it's what happened recently with the local Black Lives Matter chapter in South Bend and Mayor Pete, where there was a police shooting. And
you're talking about the death of Eric Logan.
Yes. And it seems like there's something going on here that, listen, I don't know what Pete's deal is with any of with in terms of how he's being a mayor or how he's dealing with these race issues. It could literally just be a failure of leadership. We don't know. But to me, it shows a lack of ability. Like, what is he doing on this national stage when there's problems at home as the mayor of South Bend, Indiana? He apparently met with the local Black Lives Matter group, and they came out afterwards and said it seemed like he just didn't want to be there, and it was just something he was, you know, that's their opinion. Can't really know what really happened. But from their view of things, it just seemed like just another issue with Pete Buttigieg when it comes to issues with the Black community in South Bend.
Yeah, I mean, look, I can't sort of speak to the guy's sincerity in terms of trying to address these things. I do know, you know, and no candidate is perfect. And my own personal pet peeve is the desire to have a flawless messiah of a presidential candidate. My own personal view is, you know, grow the hell up. We're all, if you're old enough to vote, you're old enough to have screwed up at some point, right, and don't expect your people to be perfect. But that said, I think certainly there are, I'll tell you my own pet theory about Buttigieg in this case. He did not come up within South Bend politics, right? He went to Harvard. He made friends and associates at the Institute of Politics there. He worked at McKinsey, the consulting firm. He made friends and political connections there. He didn't have a deep base of political support of his own within South Bend. He had some connections. And when he ran for state office in the year prior, he ran for state treasurer and impressed a lot of people, Democrats, with how well he did on a state level. It's a red state, and he ran a good race. But that meant that the people whose attention he attracted for his mayoral race one year later were old school people. There was former governor and former South Bend mayor Joe Kernan. There was Mayor Roger Parent, who had been mayor back in the 70s. These were people who were at Buttigieg's back. And it seems to me that it's entirely natural and intuitive to think that when he first was putting together what his administration would look like, he didn't have, I wouldn't think, a lot of his own experience with who are the players, who should I not be listening to and who should I be listening to? And the people who were spending, you know, five figures to put him in office, why wouldn't he listen to these people who had shown a lot of faith in him and whose judgment he probably trusted? So therefore, you see him getting rid of Boykins, who was disliked by white officers who had a lot of political connections. He brings in, so Buttigieg writes in his book that the police department suffered from a lot of like cliquishness and political connections. Who does he replace Boykins with? A former police chief from back in the 1980s. Literally, he brings back a South Bend police chief from the 1980s who's connected to all these guys. He's there as of March 31st or April 1st. So then, and by the way, also at the end of 2011, the only two people he interviews besides Boykins are people within the department, politically connected people. So in that first half of his mayoralty, first year of his mayoralty, he's basically in the pool, right? He's working within the pool that he's got. It's only a couple years later when he goes now to get a permanent replacement for the police chief. Now he does a nationwide search, which feels a lot more like a big data McKinsey recruiting kind of endeavor. So that you know, playing amateur psychologist from afar, that feels to me like someone who thinks, screw you guys, I'm going to what I know, you know? Right. I'm not taking your counsel anymore. I'm not pulling from the local pool. I'm gonna get someone far the hell away from this mess. Of course, that police chief ended up blowing up in his face too, and now the guy he's got in the position at the moment is actually a player back from all of this tape stuff.
So, Jonathan, what's next in this case of the Pete tapes?
There are a couple answers to that. The case is still in court because the Common Council wants the tapes out, and the cops who are on it do not want the tapes out. So that's literally being fought in court. I believe there's supposed to be a hearing this month, but supposedly a trial, it wouldn't even go to trial until next summer. So legally, a lot of this stuff is still going on. Politically, what's next with the tapes basically depends on whether or not Buttigieg is sort of asked about this stuff, whether he's ever in a forum with someone that they feel compelled to respond to, because they didn't answer me when I asked them, here are the quotes we've got, what have you got to say about it? They just sort of brushed us off as, you know, you're not credible. Well, maybe I'm not, but how about the stuff I'm saying? So if someone gets a mic in their face and gets an answer, then maybe we get to find out a little bit more.
Jonathan Larson, managing editor of TYT Investigates. You know, your work on this has been great. I implore everyone to go read it. Again, the links are in my on the YouTube description page and on my Patreon page. There's so much more to this story you can read in this report. And, you know, seems like you're staying on this. So I look forward to eventually hearing these tapes. I'm sure they'll be out one day.
We will see, right? We will see.
Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I hope to have you on again in the near future.
Thanks a lot, Matt. It was great. Thank you.
Take care. All right, ladies and gentlemen. As always, you can support this show by going to patreon.com/MattBinder. Go to doomwithpod.com to listen to the audio show and get all the links to iTunes, Google Play. Leave a review on iTunes. Subscribe at to our YouTube channel at doomed.tv. What else can you do? Oh, if you're watching the YouTube channel right now, you can give a one-off donation by just throwing over to Super Chat. And I will read your Super Chat comment first thing. We will now go into... Folks, we're really close to hitting the goal, the first goal I have on this Patreon page. It's the closest we've ever been. We're about 24 patrons away from the next step of this show. And the people who've been supporting this show whether from day one or just this past month. I cannot thank them enough because that's why we are where we are right now. That's, you know, wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for these people who support the show. And these people, the active members of the Patreon, are Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew H, RER, Benji, Bobby M, BZ, Champagne Kami, Chi, Christine H, Colin R, Dakota R, excuse me, Dan K, Dan M, The Dans, Dank Uger, Dave K, David Z, David P, The Daves, Dragon Slayer, Eugene B, Froz K, FTW All Day, Greg D, Grimlock, Ian Curtis J, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jeremy M, John S, Jonathan B, Jonathan L, Joseph R, Joyce M, Justin M, Justin S, The Justins, Katie S, Cats, Caution, Larry G, Lisa D, Lisa H, The Lisas, Machine Gun Etiquette, I think that's what it is, right? Yeah, Max W, User Me, Melissa M, Michael B, Michael J, Michael M, The Michaels, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Namdenet, Noel Style, O Death, Romina O, Ryan Left His Best, Scott R, Sean H, Stephen S, Struggle Session, Swizzle M, TM, Tamney G, Thaddeus A, Tina M, Tom G, Tom M, Why That Thai Guy, Will P, Utopian, and Zarin. Folks, like I said, the numbers are getting up there. And sooner or later, I will not be able to shout out everybody. So get in while you still can. Because A, you will be guaranteed for me to shout you out, because I'm going to shout out all these people till we get to 100. And on top of that, I'm going to make sure that the people who've been there since these early days are part of a special tier when we get to this new stage in the Patreon and the show. You know, you guys are the early adopters, to use tech jargon. Folks, this was sort of a niche episode, but at the same time, sort of not, because we were talking about, like, the fifth place person in the 2020 Democratic primary of, like, 20 people. This is a guy who was rising in the polls. I still don't think he's done. I'm sure he's gonna have, at least one more big moment, if not more than that. You know, I think he's a major figure to contend with in the Democratic primaries. And this is a conspiracy, a controversy that has followed him around for years. And it really has been undercovered until, like you just heard, Jonathan was saying himself when he spoke to even local people on the ground there. This is a big story for the people of South Bend, and in essence, because of Pete's role right now, should be a big story nationally. I mean, again, this isn't, he's not nailed and no one's got him, he hasn't been caught red-handed, but there's certainly something here that's worth questioning. Who knows, maybe this reporting will prove once and for all that these tapes do not implicate Pete in anything, and they were just acting the way they were acting because, I don't know, they were just worried politically that even the discussion of the tapes would be bad for them. That's a possibility. We just don't know. And the way everything is playing out, it's certainly something to look into. And I'm glad we looked into it on this show with Jonathan of TYT Investigates. There's a few big stories today I wanted to talk about, but we got to go to the members half, the patron-only half. So let me give a quick summary of at least one of them. So one of the big stories this week has been the Working Families Party, endorsing Elizabeth Warren over Bernie Sanders. It's a big deal. They endorsed Bernie in 2016, and now they're endorsing Warren, even though Bernie's still in the race. And there was a big controversy over how they endorsed, the process of endorsement. Basically, there was a leadership vote and then a membership vote. And then the final tally is a weighted vote, where the leadership vote of 50-some-odd people counts for 50% of the vote, and the membership and people who are signed up on their newsletter vote, which apparently counts to about 10,000 votes or 20,000 votes, counts for 50% of the vote. So the big deal, the big controversy, is that they won't release the vote totals for each half. They won't break out the vote totals of the membership on their own and the vote totals of the leadership on their own. And the assumption from a lot of people is that, why wouldn't they do this? It's a great way to be transparent. They're a progressive organization. Addendum, full disclosure, I support Working Families Party. I have voted on the Working Families Party line pretty much every time. I mean, there's a few, I don't remember if they ended up getting Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on their party line. I think they did. And I don't know if they got Cynthia Nixon off their part. I can't remember. But basically, they endorsed Joe Crowley over, this is the New York chapter of Working Families Party. They endorsed Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, They endorsed Joe Crowley over Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez last year. They endorsed Andrew Cuomo over Zephyr Teachout in the 2014 governor's race. I disagree with those endorsements. I disagree with them at this time. I don't always agree with Working Families Party. I fry on everything. But that being said, I support the party. They're probably the most progressive party that actually has a line on the ballot. Another addendum here. There are, without a doubt, even more progressive organizations than Working Families Party now. But again, that aside, they are an organization I support. Which is why I understand and agree with why people who support Bernie Sanders are so upset. Just release the vote totals of each side so people know how it broke down. The fact that they did so in 2015 when they endorsed Bernie Sanders is proof that they can do it and that they've done it before. So, I mean, I don't understand what the big deal is. Why? I mean, I also really don't get people who are acting like it's conspiratorial to ask for that. I mean, they don't want to do it. They don't want to do it. It's their prerogative not to do it. No one is saying they're forced to do it. They don't have to do it. But it certainly hurts their bona fides as a transparent progressive organization. I'm not saying I'm never going to support them again. I'll probably vote a Working Families Party line in the next race. But it's certainly a disappointment, and it makes you think when they roll out endorsements how to line up with who they're endorsing. You have to question that now. You know, just be transparent, and it's completely cool. We could get more into that in the second half of the show. And folks, I think I ran through everything that you need to know. Stick around if you're watching live. Patrons, you'll be able to listen to this on the podcast that's uploaded to Patreon. Otherwise, see you all next time on Doomed! They didn't even touch!